Welcome to the Virtual Millionaire Show. This show brings to you millionaire real estate entrepreneurs who have cracked the code to the money game. We discuss how to start and scale a real estate business to millions and beyond, so you can do the same. I'm your host, Michael McDonald. Today I had with me the Boakley brothers. I had with me Jesse. Him and his brother Landon specialize in flipping luxury homes in the Las Vegas market, and they are absolutely crushing it. They've done over 300 properties in the short 5 years that they've been doing it. And today we really deep dived into a lot of how they do it and some of the tips and tricks that they're doing to find deals on the MLS in this competitive market and landscape out here in Las Vegas. So welcome to the episode. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Virtual Millionaire Show. Tuning in live today with one of the Boakley brothers.
We got one.
Jesse, man, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing great. I really appreciate you having me on. Sorry we couldn't get both brothers on today, but you got one. So when you got one, you got both.
That's right. Well, excited to have you, man, because gosh, it's been probably a handful of months since you guys interviewed me on your podcast, and yeah, that was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot, and I'm excited to kind of share with my audience a different perspective of how to find deals in this crazy market.
Sure. That would be very interesting to get into.
Absolutely. So for people who don't know Jesse, the Boakley brothers, kind of fill us in, man. Like, how did you get started in real estate, and how did you get to where you're at today?
Sure, I'd love to. So my name is Jesse Boakley, one of the Boakley brothers. My partner Landon and I started our real estate investing journey in 2016. We're both born and raised here in Vegas, so we've always known that doing something in Vegas was probably within reach for us as far as starting a business, becoming entrepreneurs. So 2016, Landon had already been in real estate. I teamed up with him to get into real estate investing. And what that meant for us was buying homes to flip. So we had a little bit of experience from our family, and they gave us some guidelines. We started out with 2 to 3 flips in 2016. And since then, we've grown our flipping business to a full-scale company flipping 50 to 75 luxury properties here in Las Vegas on an annual basis. So over the course of the last 5 going on 6 years, I think we're closing in on our 350th flip here very, very soon. In the meantime, we've also grown a full service brokerage called the Boakley Group, where we have 30 traditional agents buying and selling with traditional buyers and sellers here. And we also run all of our investments through our brokerage as well. Aside from that, we also are now educators in the space. We take flipping and investing and growing a company, package it up into something that we can deliver to new investors and experienced investors alike who want to learn how to grow a flip company, to hire, to delegate, to really turn it up and scale it up. So that's our latest endeavor. So it's brokerage, flipping and investing. We do own a couple rentals, done some Airbnb, have some traditional rentals, and involved in some syndicates. And now education is our biggest thing.
Boom. So mic drop, right? Like that, there's a lot to unpack right there. And yeah, man, that's super awesome. Appreciate you for filling us all in. Sure. This show is really all about how can somebody start and scale a real estate company. And really this episode is, we're going to talk a lot about how you can do that with really little to no marketing spend.
Love that.
And so for a lot of people, you know, getting into the game in itself is, you know, maybe scary, especially when, you know, wholesalers out there talking about spending $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month on marketing. And so the amount of volume that you guys have been able to do in 5 short years is just, it's bonkers to me. It's absolutely amazing and impressive. And I commend you on that. Now, for somebody who is wanting to learn the ins and outs of this and start finding deals without any money, where's the first place to start? Like, where do you even start?
First off, this is something great to address, right? Is the entering into the real estate investing marketplace with no money, or I have very little money, or I don't have enough money to go buy a house and flip with, or I don't have enough money to spend $20,000, $30,000 a month on marketing. When we got started, we were both agents. And so what that means is we have access to the MLS, and the MLS is what we knew. So we started searching for properties to buy and invest in and flip off the MLS. Now, when it comes to absolutely $0 in marketing spend, that term is thrown around a lot. Essentially, for us, we consider it $0 because it costs you like maybe $300 to go get your real estate license. And then on a yearly basis, maybe like $1,000 to keep it active, give yourself access to the MLS. So basically, it's virtually free. A lot of people can afford to do that. That's where we find all of our properties. And that's honestly one of the biggest draws that a lot of people have to us, because they have the desire to get into real estate investing, but wholesaling and even flipping, when you try to go direct to seller, can get super expensive. That's where you're mentioning the $20,000, $30,000 a month. And look, you do it, you know, you have an incredible business, and I commend you for doing all that. Having a large overhead and spending tens of thousands of dollars on a monthly basis for marketing that hopefully I'll get some deals from is just way too scary for me. So I've lived and died by the MLS to find all of our properties. And I think when it comes to spending money on marketing, like going direct to seller, a lot of people get upset when they start, because I would consider you a legit real estate investor. You have a big spend. You've been doing it for years. Like, you're get it. You're in the game. Somebody wants to get in the game, most likely they don't have $20,000, $30,000 to blow this month. They might have two or three, and they're going up against you, against other people even bigger than you.
Right.
So their two or three really is going to be a struggle to try and get some deals out of that. So I feel for a lot of people that want to get started and they have low budgets. So that's why I like bringing and explaining our strategy, because truly you could be a real estate agent. And if you even don't want to be an agent, you could partner with an agent who is already has access to the MLS, and you don't necessarily need to be licensed yourself to do this. And it costs less than $1,000 a year.
Yeah, man. It's such a good point, because like, that's the biggest thing that people think about is like, oh my goodness, like I'm going to have to spend so much money to find these deals. Mm-hmm. And then when I do find this opportunity that I spent $3,000 for, now I got to go up against you or somebody else. And I also feel sorry for him. And looking back, like a few years ago, or four or five years ago when I got started, I'm like, I don't even like, I'm trying to remember how I even did it versus these other big dogs in the market. And so that's where you guys have found a very awesome niche of finding these properties, being an agent and capitalizing on that. So let's kind of talk about that, like the methodology behind what you do, because I'm very intrigued. I know that we're leaving hundreds of thousands, probably millions of dollars on the table by not using some of these strategies. And so if somebody's a real estate agent watching this, or maybe they're a desiring real estate agent and they're like, I want to start finding these deals, what's the very first step that they would need to do besides get their license?
Sure. So you brought up a good point too. An agent versus somebody who maybe wants to be an agent, how, and they might have a little bit of a differentiator in how they want to get started with this.
Sure.
I think a lot, I'll touch on the agent first. I think a lot of agents overlook a large piece of what could be their business in working with investors. As you're an agent, you're a tradition, you're representing traditional buyers and sellers. You're out of business every time that person sells or buys a house. You have to go find a new client. The magic of working with an investor is, let's say someone like me or someone like you, I want this type of house or this few types of homes. Go and find me this. And if it works based on these criteria, I'll buy this one and the next one and the next three and the next 30 from you. So that agent, I don't understand why that doesn't click in their minds. Like, wow, I have this client that is a repeat buyer, is a repeat seller. And I have such a big or a big potential book of business from them. Why are they not tapping into this? Why are they just kind of banging their heads against the wall dealing with buyers and sellers when they could open up, do that as well, but still work with investors? And create a whole nother side to their business. So that's for agents, right? Getting started, wanting to invest. Now there's also ways for agents to partner with investors and investors to partner with agents too. Like, I technically don't need my license at this point now because I have an acquisitions manager who is an agent, and he could go represent me, find everything that I want to find. And I'm just the buyer and the investor at the end of the day.
Right.
There's a lot of different ways to partner, to JV, to hire a guy to do this for you. But if you want to do it, the best thing you can do to get started, if you're interested in using the MLS in this acquisition strategy, getting your license, and without having any experience, being able to understand other people that do what you do. And so in my area, obviously you have to figure out an area that you want to work in. But once you do, going and talking to and finding mentors and people that can help you that are doing what you want to do. So right. We started 2016. We had great role models who were essentially our competition, but they did the same thing we wanted to do in town. So we could kind of, from afar, look at what they were buying, look at how many they were buying, look at how often they're selling homes, like kind of see the model from somebody. So I have my license. I'm ready to go. I just don't have the experience yet, but I have this good model that I'm looking on. I'm saying, okay, if I can do that, it's working for him. Why can't I do that for me? And you take two or three of those models, put them all together, and then start taking action yourself. But you kind of have these bumpers on your bowling lane for you based on those people and what they're doing. So that's a great way to, if you have no experience, getting your license, getting involved, following a model of somebody else who's doing it. Then again, if you don't have your license or you're a realtor working or partnering with that realtor who may have a ton of MLS experience, who can go find you the home that you want to find without having to actually do the searching yourself.
Yeah, that's really solid advice there, because I mean, I think there's a lot that goes into running a successful flipping company that you guys are running right now. I mean, you touched a little bit on one way to find these deals, right? It's acquisitions. And then there's obviously the dispositions and the whole other side of it. So we're going to focus on on acquisitions.
Sure.
And you made a point about agents. You know, obviously they have the opportunity to build a relationship, and we have the opportunity as investors to build a relationship with an agent who's going to be kind of like we're deal flow for each other. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think a lot of agents probably have people who they may work with as investors. My question to the agents watching this and out there is like, hey, I think it's awesome that you have an investor that you're working with. How can I earn your second spot and then show you that I'm a solid investor and I'm going to make doing business with you so easy to then become your first call? Because there's a lot of people an agent could call when it comes to an off-market property or a pocket listing or whatever the situation may be. So how do you position your guys' self to kind of get in there and hear about these deals first and foremost? That's one of the opportunities probably. And then of course you guys are doing some outreach too, I imagine, which we can get into as well.
Yeah, you can expect for those agents or the agents that you would like to source deals for you or deals that would work for you to know about you if you're not taking action to share what you want with your local community. This is a great way to do it. Online, on social media, letting people know, hey, this is what I'm doing now. This is what I'm interested in. If you have any connection or you are involved in this, please reach out to me and let's talk. That's a fantastic way that everyone overlooks to at least get the ball rolling. You'd also don't have to be paralyzed of, I got to find the person and then go after them. I can't tell you how many people I've found from first, second, third, fourth degree relationships where I reach out, this guy knows a guy who knows, has a cousin who knows a guy, and that's the perfect guy, you know? But like, I there's no way I would have found him directly. I just had to kind of cast a net and understand that I might be bouncing around, taking referrals, going here, there, I know somebody, to eventually find the right person. But so to give you this a little more concisely is definitely letting the social media world know what you want. Even if you have a small following, doesn't matter. Let them know. And then being more a part of your local community as well. So whether that's realtors events, tons of stuff that realtors are invited to that you can go to and attend and network and meet realtors and hopefully meet one that's interested in doing something with you or doing something along those lines. There's also different kinds of meetups that aren't realtor focused that are maybe more investor focused. Some are wholesale meetups, some are flipper meetups. There's a ton of stuff if you check, and meetup.com is actually a great way to find some of those. If anyone's familiar or unfamiliar with that, fantastic website. You can browse it for free, take a look at your local meetups in your area, but you have to go out there to find the right person because they don't know you exist.
Yep. Yeah, it's a great point. Like you're putting yourself out there and you just never know who's watching, right? So by doing that, you are going to get people who are seeing you, hearing about you. And the biggest thing that I found with just social media is like the consistency of it. Like it's one thing to pop in once a month. It's a whole nother thing to show up consistently daily, multiple times a day. And so I've noticed that you guys have really stepped up your social media game. So I'd be very curious, man, to see how direct correlation for you and your business, like how has that helped with deal flow or has it? Like,
sure. It's a great topic. And yes, it overall, the answer is resoundingly yes. It's helped us in more than one facet of our business, not just deal flow.
Yep.
But just to start on social media from where we started, it was a true like investment. You have to make the investment. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't always mean money. That just means your time and your commitment and your energy and your consistency. And so that's what we did. It was over a year ago when we decided, okay, we can see that a lot of people that do what we do are having great success with social media. I don't know exactly how or how it's helping them, but I know that it's helping them. Mm-hmm. So let's do it too. So we decided to invest in it. And what that meant for us, because we wanted to do it in the best possible way and put our best possible foot forward, it was a capital investment as well as our time and effort and energy. And so we paid a videographer. We met him every single week. We wrote scripts. We figured out what was interesting, what wasn't, what was trending, what was popular on other people's pages, and started making some of those videos and putting them out there. We stuck to a schedule. And that's the most important thing, being consistent, is setting something that's achievable for you. It doesn't have to be the same as me or you or anyone else. If you can do one a day, do one a day and do not skip. So we decided we were going to do, I think, 3 YouTube videos a week, which is a lot when you just first get started. 3 long form videos a week, like 10 to 20 minute videos.
Yeah.
It's intense. And so we did that for an entire year. And I think we grew to 2,000, 3,000 YouTube subscribers. It's a very low return for an entire year of a capital investment and time and effort and energy. And then we started to take a few more platforms really seriously, Instagram, TikTok, and those started to do pretty well for us. And so just recently, I'd say as of this year, we really started to see the fruit of our labor come to fruition and help us, to your point, with people that are in our market or local markets saying, hey, what do you think about this deal? Hey, I got this locked up. Or, hey, I saw this from a wholesaler. What do you think about this? What's great for that is I would have never seen that otherwise. So I can attribute that opportunity at least to the power of social media, purely and simply. Now, yeah. Another big thing that I don't want to rant too long, so stop me if you want me to.
No, you're killing it. Keep going.
One great thing I just want everyone to understand too is when you're growing a business, finding people you want to work with is also a very hard job. It's almost a job in itself. And so we've been able to post, send requests out, put on our story, hey, we just expanded here, or we're looking for this skill, or we're looking for this person, and get so many responses of either, hey, I can do that, or hey, my cousin's looking for a job, or hey, my brother could do that for you. Whatever it is, it's been so great with finding talent too. So deals, yes, of course, that's what all real estate investors want. But if you're growing a business, your team can be much more vital. And so it's been great being able to find some good talent too, to bring into the team, all from the same avenue.
Yeah. So, I mean, I heard so many things that like it's benefited, right? There's the list is never ending, really. Mm-hmm. What I love the most about it is like, yes, there's a time and in investment right now, and time is money, but long term evergreen content, it's out there forever. And by being consistent and showing up, like, that is showing people that these guys are out there, like, they're doing deals. And if they can show up this consistently on social media, I can guarantee you, I know the type of person who's doing this, how they run their business is probably at a high standard or very high level as well.
Great point.
That's attracting who do I want to do business with, right? Mm-hmm. Already kind of pre-qualifies you guys as people, which I think is pretty cool. And by the way, guys, for you who are watching this live, comment below. Tell us where you're coming in from. If you have questions, drop them in the chat. We're definitely going to be opening up some time to get some questions answered towards the end of this as well. But cool, man. So acquisitions-wise, what I'm most intrigued about, and you know, social media obviously has been a game changer for a lot of reasons, but in regards to the application, if I am trying to buy houses off the MLS, in my world, I only do off market unless mm-hmm. an agent brings me deals, which that does happen. And we've bought a few houses off the MLS or right before they went.
Okay.
But if I'm trying to buy a house off the MLS, which you guys are very good at, what are some of the tips and tricks? You know, we don't have to get too far into it. Obviously, you teach on this a lot as well. But for somebody who's like telling you, like, hey, Jesse, man, I offered 100 times on the MLS when I first got started, which I did. Mm-hmm. And I was just lowballing and expecting all of a sudden for somebody to just be like, oh, sure, well, I'll just accept your lowball offer. What's the key? Like, how do I successfully negotiate one of those deals that are listed?
We're all waiting for that to happen, right?
Right, sure. Exactly.
Let's take my equity.
Yep.
So I do have a few of these things, and I'm going to touch on a couple of them right here on this live. But if anyone really does want more in depth, that's what we specialize in. So you can definitely check out our pages, check out our Instagram, our YouTube. And if you're even interested in our academy, you can definitely sign up to get really granular in a lot of this stuff. But there are some really key points I think that I could share. Most people overlook. So what you probably did when you started attacking the MLS, I'm going to send offers like crazy, right? How many do you think you were sending a day?
I mean, it was probably like 5 or 6, which to me was a ton because I was working a full-time job and I was like having to run the numbers on these. I mean, they weren't just completely blind. I was actually having to put some thought into it, and I'm like, okay, this looks about right. I'm going to send it over. Mm-hmm. Having the call with the agent, the text, the follow. I mean, there's just a whole lot that goes into it.
A lot of work.
Took a lot of time.
Sure. So one thing people do is, in my opinion, of course, that's way too minimal of a number to be submitting on a daily basis, just for reference. And yes, you're just starting out and there's different variables, but our acquisition manager submits 20 to 25 offers a day.
There we go.
So he goes for 100 a week.
That's insane.
It's a lot. And it's one guy. But the way he does this is he's not falling into, I would call it a trap that a lot of people that begin this process fall into. I go log on to the MLS and I want to find something that looks right for a flip.
Mm.
So does everyone.
Yeah.
I'm looking for a house that's distressed, that's like got holes in the ceiling, got leaks, evidence of all this stuff. And guess what? Everyone else is looking for that too. And so you send an offer, most likely they have a bunch of other offers that look just like your offer too. Mm-hmm. So you're also going after the most obvious homes, and you're competing in the most competitive place possible on the MLS.
Gotcha.
The obvious evidence stuff.
So when the people are putting like fixer upper in the description, everyone has a queue. So when a fixer upper goes to market, it automatically pings them and the 800 other real estate investors who want to see those properties too.
Fixer upper, needs work, TLC, handyman special.
Yep.
I could go on, but there's a bunch of those, and that's the low hanging fruit, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with submitting an offer on that property, but submitting an offer and only looking at those properties is where you're going to get really frustrated mm-hmm. because you're not going to get a lot of results. It's something you want to pay attention to, but it can't be your only strategy. So one thing that I see most people do is they mentally disqualify homes based on what they see on the MLS, from submitting an offer. And so what I mean by that is I'm scrolling through, oh, I really like this neighborhood. There's one here that has handyman special. Oh, I'm definitely going to send an offer there. There's one next door that's listed maybe 80, 90% of retail value, like pretty close to retail value, maybe even closer. And the home doesn't look that bad. Actually, it looks like if someone wanted to, they could actually move in there and move into that home today. So I definitely can't offer on that one, right? Because yeah. that one doesn't look like it needs a flip. That's the little nuance where people get tripped up. They disqualify homes based on what they see, what they read, the pictures that they look on the MLS, and they don't submit an offer. But truly, you know nothing about their position, about their motivation, about why they're selling or what they're willing to take based on looking at the pictures of this almost move-in ready home. So that's where we've had most or all of our success, honestly, is by not mentally disqualifying homes to send offers on.
Wow.
So there's so many of these homes that we submit on that look great. Honestly, like, yes, it's dated or some finishes and style of stuff is maybe a little out of style or out of date. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that if I send them an offer, they're not looking for a quick exit or they're moving or yeah, somebody else is listing the house for their family and they've all already moved across state and they need to get rid of this. I have just the possibilities are endless and you never know. Most people never offer. And that's the problem.
Unbelievable. I would imagine too, especially with these higher priced houses, they're probably not getting offers, let alone multiple offers, like on some like high end homes, because you guys specialize in luxury.
Right.
And so such an untraditional thought, because it's automatically you think investor, fix up. You gotta have a house that's distressed.
Right.
There's a lot of different distresses, and a lot of it doesn't even have to do with the condition of the house.
Absolutely.
It's a motivation thing, right?
And you mentioned too, so we do specialize in luxury homes. Those are the majority of our flips are at least Vegas, right? It's $1 million plus. We would kind of consider that a luxury home.
Right.
When we go after, we were just at one of our properties yesterday. We had a broker up, and this is a great example. This home is in one of the most prestigious guard-gated country club communities here in Las Vegas called Southern Highlands.
Mm-hmm.
Homes are anywhere from 1 to 25 million. Now, this home was listed for 1.8, and honestly, totally move-in ready. Three, four-bedroom house, beautiful, on the course, has a pool. Like anybody would be stoked to live in that house. But the problem is, yes, it's pretty dated. It's kind of almost original to its original build, which it's not that old, but it's about 20 years old. So it's not in style.
Right.
Any owner occupant that doesn't want to just accept that house because there's 10 others that have the same outdated finishes in it that are listed. So why would they pick that one? Any owner occupant that wants to go buy one of those homes is most likely, especially at the 1-2 million mark, is going to want something pretty nice. And the problem is, if they were to buy this house, they're going to have to sink $300,000-$500,000 into it over 6 to 12 months before they can move into it. The reality is, not a lot of owner occupants want to sign themselves up for a giant rehab project.
Right.
They got other stuff to do. So that's where, especially in the luxury market, we find incredible success, because to your point, they may not be looking at any offers. They may not have anybody ready to move into that house, anybody financed or cash that is an owner occupant trying to look at that house, because it's a giant headache and a giant problem for them. They can't move in. So we come along, we're looking at the numbers, especially at that price point. A discount of $100,000 or $200,000 isn't crazy. If that's a $400,000 house, that's 50% of the value, right? But a 1.8 listing to get it locked up at 1.7, that's actually pretty good for them. So we ended up buying this at like 1.6, $200,000 off. But they had nobody else looking at it. And that was kind of earlier on in our careers when we started doing luxury, that's where the light bulb turned on. It's like, wow, why are we competing against every other flipper in Las Vegas? Why don't we just go after this price point? And all of a sudden, we're playing in our own playground by ourselves.
Yeah. So what were you doing in the beginning? Were you looking at those distress opportunities on the east side, or what were you doing to
we
in the
were
beginning?
We were looking at those and trying to find homes at lower price points because they were quicker jobs, easier rehabs, because we hadn't had no experience, right? Mm-hmm. So we wanted to go in and do cosmetic stuff. We wanted to do flooring, base, paint, cabinets, counters, get out of there. And so we did do a lot of properties in central Vegas, east side of Vegas. Not all terrible areas, but just very, I guess you call them like entry-level homes, kind of cookie cutter homes, 3-bedroom, 2-bath. You can go in there, do a quick rehab. There's lots and lots of comps, right? Because that's a very homogenous neighborhood area that has a lot of the same homes in it. And so the formula was pretty easy and it was a great way to get started. But the reality of the business was, as we wanted to scale and grow, we were competing and competing with pretty much everyone who wanted those homes. So that was the tough part for us. It was, how are we going to do a large number of homes from what we're doing now? How are we going to increase our numbers by where we want to go when we're competing so heavily? So that's where we kind of found the luxury market.
Right on. So how, like, I assume the formula is a whole lot different from a $300,000 house versus a $1.8 million house as far as like the offer price, because you said you offered 1.6, mm-hmm. They were listed at 1.8. You're obviously seeing a lot more upside than maybe obviously what the outdatedness of the home would essentially list for. And with that comes a lot of risk, right? So higher risk, I would assume higher reward. So how are you, do you have like a minimum requirement that you would need to make to take that much risk on? Because in my mind, like anytime I look at $1 million house, I'm like, oh my gosh, like money costs like so much expense. Yeah. Like it's so much money to have to come out of pocket with, obviously not out of pocket, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. More risk on the streets, if you will.
Which is more money involved. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you weigh the risk versus the reward? Do you have like a minimum dollar amount? Cause your ARV times 75%, 80% in my mind doesn't make any sense on these, high
yeah, so
homes.
That blanket approach type of evaluation, I guess, evaluation is hard to just apply to every price point, especially when you start climbing price points. So it's hard to say this is different in the luxury market. We need to buy it at 65, not 70%. You know, that there's no real blanket approach that we can give that.
Right.
We're super conservative. Like as we talked about earlier, speaking to other people, doing what you do, competitors in your market, friendly competitors, mentors, role models, we can see what they've been doing and see how to do either exactly what they're doing or play a little safer than what they're doing. We tend to play a little bit safer than a lot of people. There are a lot of homes that we could have bought that other investors did. We decided not to. Whether they worked out or not, they just weren't safe enough for us. Mm-hmm. So that's where the risk question comes into play. We do want to, especially in the higher price point homes, be incredibly conservative with our rehab budgets, because that is a whole nother animal versus a $300,000 house. Now we're talking about a $300,000 rehab, right? And our ARVs get a little bit more, I'd say, touchy, because in a neighborhood where there's 1,000 3-bedroom, 2-baths, you can easily find a 3-bedroom, 2-bath that is the same house, right? It's so easy. But in a neighborhood like this, homes aren't necessarily all one-off customs, but they are customized and they are large and they're in neighborhoods where lots differentiate value as well. That's something in a neighborhood of 3-bedroom, 2-baths you rarely even think about unless it's gigantic. These lots can all be the same size on this golf course, but depending where it is on the golf course, could be worth $100,000, $200,000 more. And now you get into things like golf course position, views, mountain views, city views, all those things that you don't really consider when you're doing cookie cutter homes have big effects on value. And so being able to go in and take note of those nuances in a very conservative way, of course, is how we navigate that luxury market. But it's definitely a lot different. Once you get the skills down, of how to look at it differently, how to bid the job rehab differently, how to make sure you're covering your bases and being conservative. Essentially, you kind of learn, okay, this is the same thing. We're doing the same thing here. We're evaluating a house. We're bidding out the rehab project. We're designing a house within budget, and we're selling it based off the comps. Theoretically, it's the same process.
Yeah, same process, different numbers, bigger numbers, yeah, and more precision. I feel like you have to kind of have a really good grip on who that end buyer is going to be. So I'm curious, like on that 1.6 purchase listed for 1.8, what does it list for on the back end? And how, like, kind of, let's walk through that deal a little bit.
So we just listed it last week. It took us a little over 4 months start to finish. It's 4,600 square feet. And so we put just under $300,000 into that.
Oh, wow.
So it's quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
We bought it for, like I said, 1.6. Let's say, let's call it an even $300,000. And then we bought this with a private money partner that has incredibly low holding costs, interest costs. So once you add those in and add our selling costs and everything else associated with the project, which is, again, where a lot of people mess up. They just think you buy it for this, you put this into it, and you sell it for this. And those are the only numbers. Right. There's a lot more that goes into it. But once you add it all up, we're listed at 245 right now on the market. We've had a lot of action. We're actually the third cheapest listing in that neighborhood.
Wow.
Fully upgraded. And so if we do sell it there, we should take down about $250,000.
Yeah. I mean, that's not bad for a 4 month rehab, right?
No, it's great. And your earlier question was, what is your, I guess, like threshold with where you buy these? So generally on any investment, on a flip, we try to make 10% cash on cash return. Mm-hmm. And so what we try to do with luxury homes is just increase that a little bit to like 12, 14%.
Right.
So we just try to run our numbers with a little more meat on the bone.
Okay. So that makes perfect sense. Now, there's a lot that goes into the flipping side, which I don't think we'll have time to get into too deep today. But can you kind of touch on like how you're able to keep a handful of these projects going at once? Because there's a lot more cash outlay. So somebody actually had a really good question. They're asking, like, obviously you touched on the financing with the lower interest rate, mm-hmm. but how are you able to fund like even a few of these? I mean, like, 1.6 is a lot of money in itself,
right?
A few $100,000 of, capital to fund the rehab. And then you multiply that by even two. I mean, that's a lot of money on the streets, man.
Sure,
we buy 10 houses and we're only out of pocket for $1.5 million. You know what I mean? So it's a whole different, like crazy ball game. So, you mentioned the private money, but are you using hard money relationships for the funding too?
I do. So the money and funding side is very diverse. And what I mean by that is I have hard money lenders. I have private money lenders that work like hard money lenders. I have true private money lenders. I have equity partners, about four or five different variations or structures of funding. And so what we do, a lot of times we'll kind of just know off the top of our head, hey, this is only an $800,000 house. We could buy it with either this, or this. It's good for them. Or, hey, this is going to be a $2 million purchase. Like, we're going to have to use one or the other of these guys. So when I have all of those options, and you need to have different options, what we do is we plug all of our metrics, all of our numbers for this property into a calculator that we've made that basically just spits out the numbers per each lender and what it would take, what capital requirements are involved, what return would be, what overhead and interest costs would be on a monthly basis. We can kind of get a scope of, hey, this over here is going to require a ton of capital out of our pocket, or we're going to have to gap fund or bridge loan this for a lot of money. Over here, we could use this private money partner. Yes, we have to give up a percentage of profit, but we absolutely have no dollars out of pocket if we use their money. And so that's where we kind of evaluate where we're at with our business. Do we have excess capital reserves? Are we willing to go invest ourselves? Do we not have those reserves? And would we like to use a private money partner to take down this property and fund it so that we don't have to use our funds? That's a constant ongoing basis, but having a diverse amount of options is the mm-hmm. number one way were able to take down different price points, different remodel expenses, different things like that. And once you add them up, you have to have a lot. So yes, it adds up very quickly. Like you said, we at any given time in our normal healthy inventory, we've scaled down a little bit recently. We hold about 20 to 25 properties in inventory. That's either just bought, under construction, or listed on the market. And if those are all a million plus, you can see that that's quite a lot of money on the streets.
That's a lot of money on the streets.
Right.
No, I appreciate for breaking that down because it's digestible and it makes sense for somebody who is like watching this and like, oh, well, like the Boakley brothers must just have $20 million just liquid in their bank. and we obviously that's not always the case, but it's a win-win when you can bring somebody else in, and you sleep probably pretty good at night when you know that you don't have a million of your own cash just sitting in this property for 6 to 8 months, depending on how long it takes. And so there's something to be said about that peace of mind to give away a little bit of profit, and you know that money costs money. So that's okay. Another cool thing, or I guess that I wanted to ask you about, is like, when you do have your guy making 25 offers a day,
sure.
how often is he getting people that are like, I'm guessing it probably never happens where they actually just accept the offer right out of the gate. You should go for the no, right? And when they do, like, is there a lot of back and forth on that negotiation, or how does that process typically look?
So there's not a lot of people that say, great, you submitted an offer 100,000 low, I'll take it right now, no questions. Right. That does not happen.
The low you offer too much if that's the case.
Yes. The low hanging fruit is usually already picked.
Right.
So what we do and what we find is that our success has come from treating our offers just like direct to seller leads. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of MLS people know what that even means. But when we submit an offer, talk with the agent, hey, this is what we needed at. This is a number that works for us. It's our business. This is who we are. This is what we do. Hey, look, I understand. Thanks for submitting. My seller's just not there yet. You know, we've had some showings, had some action, or we've only been on the market for 3 weeks. We appreciate it, but we're not ready for that. Okay, no worries. Our offer's there if you need it. A week, a few weeks, a month go by. They have still not sold. All the while, we're calling them. Hey, how's it going? How are showings? How's it been? Hey, just so you know, our offer's still there. Are you guys ready to entertain that? No, we're not ready yet. Okay, next week. Hey, how are the showings? How's everything going? I see you're still not in contract. What's going on? It's nurturing.
Uh-huh.
That offer's been sent. It's been rejected. It's long since expired. But we're still in the game with that listing agent. And so that's where a lot of people just lose on the MLS, because they submit the offer, they get rejected, and they move on. We're still in the game with that listing agent. So a lot of our deals come from offers that were sent a month, 2 months prior, because of the nurture and follow-up, to stay top of mind with that listing agent and the sellers, and to work on them until they meet you where you are. It's not always the easiest case to find somebody who is right where you are, and that's the low-hanging fruit, right? So you need to cast a net, but also nurture everything you're doing so that they will, and when they will, change their minds, become more motivated, whatever it is, you're right there.
Yeah. So when somebody says like the deals are in the follow-up, they're not just saying the deals are in the follow-up. Like the deals, even if on market, it's in the follow-up. And so like 25 offers a day, again, and still trying to wrap my head around it. You know, in the off-market space, we can make a lot less offers because we're dealing direct to the seller, and, you know, follow-up is still very important for us.
Mm-hmm.
So with those offers that you're making, like how many offers do you have to make to really buy a house using that?
So generally methodology? this is why his number on a weekly basis rests at about 100, because we've taken a look at our KPIs and understood what we want to buy, right? So our company, we would like to buy 4 to 6 homes a month in, you know, all set, all well and good with a healthy market, everything normal. We'd like to buy 4 to 6 homes a month. So what we found is that if he sends out of every 100 that he sends, we'll generally be entertained from 7 to 8.
Okay.
Very, very low, right? We're already in the single digits here.
Yeah.
Now, out of those that are entertained, that means some may say, let's have a conversation, but we're too far apart. Some may counter. Some may say, oh, you know, whatever it is. But there's some sort of conversation going on immediately from the offer with about seven or eight of those. Now, whether we have to counter and they don't accept, whatever happens in that those next few conversations, about, let's say, 20-25% of that seven or eight is going to fall off and just become a nurture. And so that will leave us with 3, 4, 5 properties that we can actually put into contract, go bid, understand if they're going to work for us, right? Just because we sent the offer doesn't mean we're actually going to buy it yet. But right. We can at least go and evaluate those homes and then determine, yes, our rehab numbers work, or we need to scale it back, or we need to go back to them and ask for some money back because the numbers aren't jiving, whatever it is. But the reason he sends 100 is because it's whittled down to those that respond and then those that we actually execute. And so right. That should deliver us about 4 or 5 homes a month.
That's amazing. So I think an important thing that I remembered you saying from last time was the way you pay your acquisition guy who's doing this, because it takes a lot of work like on his part. So he must be incentivized, obviously, to make it worth his time to do that. So can you kind of talk about like, how can I incentivize as somebody who I have a flipping operation? I don't necessarily need the realtor side of the business as much as I like the idea of implementing this and having agents work with me and being like, you know, building that relationship. But how do you incentivize the actual acquisition guy to keep hustling, keep making 25 offers a day, keep grinding to make this happen?
So getting them started, I'm not gonna lie, it's hard, especially if they're a traditional agent. That would be one scenario. Or also another hard scenario is if they are just not doing any business.
Right.
On top of that, if you're not a full-blown company ready to buy 4 homes a month, then that's another element of difficulty too. Because let's say, okay, I'm ready to buy one. Once I buy one, I might not need to buy one for a while, right? So it's tough, but there's different levels of realtors that are good for different situations, like I just mentioned. For ours, let's just speak from experience here. We are a company that looks to buy that many homes. For him, understanding and our relationship with him is a true partnership relationship. He doesn't do anything else besides look for us. And our deal is that for every home that we buy, the magic of commission takes care of our acquisition agent. So there's no need for any other fees or anything to tack on like you were direct to seller if somebody brought you or a wholesaler brought you something. There's already money on the table.
Yeah.
And when we're talking luxury homes, that's not a little bit of money either. 2, even 3%, right, of $1 million. We're talking a good chunk of change here. So our deal with him, granted that we've scaled to volume, is that we will split commissions, whatever is offered on the buy side, 50-50. And so the normal is 3%, right? 3% of $1 million, $30,000. He gets $15,000 if we decide to buy that house. Yeah. That's fantastic. A lot of realtors would work with a buyer to go buy a $500,000 house and show them 300 homes and work for months and months and months and then finally get one accepted and then finally close it and make 15. For him, he sat at home. He's got a home office. All he did was what he likes to do, talk and negotiate, doesn't have to deal with clients, doesn't have to show any homes, only has to deal with one buyer over and over and over again. So half is more than fair when you can see the volume and what that means for him based on how many homes we buy. So in terms of what that means for him at the end of the day, splitting commissions last year on 58, 59, 60 homes, somewhere in there is like what we had actually bought and closed. I think he made close to 700,000, which puts him in the like 10th percent of the 1% of realtors.
Yeah. That's insane. One client. That is absolutely insane. Well, there you guys have it. There's the blueprint if you want to, you know, go crush it, but obviously you have a lot of things that you're doing, templates and all that stuff where people can obviously dive deeper into as well. We'll get into that, where they can find you and stuff like that. But for people who are watching this live, if you have questions for Jesse, drop your comments below and we'll save a few minutes here towards the end to answer those. But while they're thinking about their questions, Jesse, man, where can people learn more about you, what you're doing, and kind of get more into your world?
Sure. So a lot of really good nuggets were talked about today. And to be honest, we're very transparent people. So if you go onto our Instagram, our TikTok, and our YouTube, those are our three primary accounts. All the accounts are named The Boakley Brothers. And you can see it spelled right here below me, B-O-E-C-K-L-E. The Boakley Brothers is our account across all platforms. And we just show you and talk about and deliver all of this content every single day. So if you're interested in acquisitions or realtor partners or designing and flipping million-dollar luxury homes, all of that is on there. All of that is free. And you can get in touch with us directly through any of those platforms because we do take a look at all of our comments. We look at our DMs. We have a team here that shares all of that stuff with us. So you can get in touch with us and you can learn a lot just from following us there. But I just want to mention quickly, if anyone does do that and then decides they want a really granular coaching experience on building their business with us, we do offer that as well. So you can DM us on any of those platforms and let us know you're interested. It's called the Boakley Brothers Bootcamp, and it's a quarterly class where we take you from start to finish on how to build a flipping business and what's worked for us and teach you those skills. We are the coaches. You see us every week. It's very hands-on. And I highly suggest it if anyone really wants to build their business with a great guideline.
So good. So yeah, you guys are definitely going to want to go follow the Boakley Brothers if you're not already following them. I know I've learned a lot and I feel like we could probably talk another hour on the disposition side.
Easy.
Obviously, we don't have time for that, but I really appreciate you coming on, man. It's been awesome. And anybody have any questions before we wrap it up?
Yeah, last minute questions, feel free. And again, thank you for having us on. Let's get back on and dive into another topic, maybe in a couple of days or weeks, whatever works for you, but I'd love to do it again.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I would love to as well. So Austin, if we have any questions that need to be answered here, make sure to let us know. I've been trying my best to...
Nothing from the live. Lives had just people coming in and out, but no real big questions yet. So,
okay, cool. Awesome, man. Well, thank you again, Jesse. Did you get a question there?
Yeah, he said, have one question. Is the coaching one-on-one? So it's a virtual coaching experience. So weekly we're on calls just like this. You are on with me and my partner, Landon. There are a lot of other students in the call. But during that call, everyone has the opportunity to bring any questions about the curriculum and the content and talk to us directly. So it almost is like you have us one-on-one. You're just in more of a digital classroom setting. But there also is a lot of opportunity for us to connect with all of our students and answer one-on-one questions. I've had such a great experience with our students so far, and I've helped them with everything from hiring people to finding their next deal to designing a living room and how to put this fireplace in that position and that place and why. It can be very, I guess it could be whatever you want it to be. And so that's where I really enjoy it. Landon really enjoys it. If you're interested in that, definitely reach out to us and let us know.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer for me, guys. I mean, like, obviously, if you are wanting to learn this stuff, you could go about it yourself. But having that advisor and literally being on a call just like this and having the ability to ask a real-time question makes the difference between maybe you getting a deal and you not. And I know that for me, mentorship was everything in the beginning because there's just no way that I could have. I just don't think I would have been able to figure it out. Russ without having that. And if I did, I'd still be trying to figure it out. So super valuable there. But awesome, man. Well, thank you again, Jesse. We're going to wrap it up here. But yeah, for anybody who wants to reach out to them, reach out. And if you got value from this show, please like, subscribe. We're on all the platforms, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and tell a friend because I think, you know, Jesse provided a ton of value here today. So I want to make sure people hear about it.
Share it
out there. Cool. All right, guys. We'll catch you next time.
All right. Thanks for having me on.